Hello and welcome to Zero Hanger TV for this week. I'm your host, Phoenix Trinidad, and as always, I'm joined by Chief AFL reporter, editor, Mr. Mitch Keating.
It is fine.
Hello, mate.
Mr. or Master, it's fine. Yeah, no, all good. Hey, nice to be here again, as always. Yeah.
And on my left, I have Mr. Aidan Cellini, AFL reporter. How you going, mate?
Good.
Boys back in town around the round table today. So, first thing off the list, Geelong, are they back to flag contenders? It has been a tough 18 months of Geelong not being in the top eight, but they look the goods.
They do. I think they'd be really, really happy with their midfield group in particular, which is easily their biggest weakness heading into this season and obviously last year as well. No Cam Guthrie. They would have loved to have had him to start the year, but and then no Dangerfield most recently. No Rhys Stanley, so they whack Toby Conway as their only ruckman against the Hawks. They have Tanner Bruin leading the way. Like, they still have Atkins and Blitzovs in there to run through, but they must be so happy with what they're getting out of Parfitt, who hasn't always been a best 22 player. Bruin looks like he's becoming the player that the Giants would have loved to have had him emerge into as a first-round pick. But, yeah, it's their midfield hasn't been dominant. But I think they're just holding up against good midfield groups. Like, the Hawks have a great midfield. Adelaide last week, while has been shaky for them, they again stood up, and perhaps with Dangerfield helping. And then in round one as well against the Saints, same thing. Danger led the way, but there was a lot of supporting roles from guys who, yeah, were probably a reason why they weren't as competitive last year, because they just weren't at the level yet. But we're seeing, a lot of good names come through. And obviously Max Holmes playing more defensive, but offering great run. Jai Clark getting a good run now after just one game in his maiden year. So they must be really happy with what their midfield group's doing, knowing how well their backline is and how star-studded their attack is. So flag contenders is still a big call. Like I said, they've beaten Hawthorn and Adelaide, who don't look great at the moment. So a nice big test coming up this week against the Dogs, who have probably one of the best midfield groups on paper, Tim English as well as the ruckman. So it's going to be interesting to see how Geelong line up their midfield and gather around.
Yeah, I've definitely got them in that top eight. What about you, Aidan?
Yeah, I think the beauty about Geelong is they've always been labelled too old, too slow. I think a few pundits last year had them as an end of an era. Obviously, Selwood leaving 2022, Isaac Smith last year. Probably going to be Tom Hawkins' last year. Obviously, Dangerfield and a few others are getting close to the end of their time. But you can see where their growth is going to come from, especially this year and into the future. As you mentioned, Tanner Bruin, Max Holmes, Jai Clark's finally getting a crack at it with a few injuries to the key older stars. Loving Ollie Henry's start to the season. He's really, Colin would love to still have him.
Yeah, they'd love to have him.
As that kind of mercurial second, third tall, which he's playing perfectly to the foil of Jeremy Cameron, who goes up further the ground, and obviously Tom Hawkins down as a key pillar in the forward line. So, yeah, I do think Geelong have the scope to make the finals and really cause some damage. It's kind of that weird thing that they always seem to just make it. Everyone's just got faith that they'll just do well, week in, week out. Obviously, when you play them, you've got a bit of fear that they might roll you, their stars might turn it on. So I guess it's kind of that consistency that they've had over 15, 16 years or whatever it is, that really puts fear into the opposition and the rest of the competition.
Yeah, I think one thing that's helping them this year, I know it's only three rounds in, but injuries haven't been too large. I think they entered the season with Rowan and Guthrie out, and that was about it. And they've got replacements for both of those guys. Not that they wouldn't be in the starting 22, but not the biggest names or areas of concern if they're missing them. And I think guys like Zach Guthrie stood up. Jake Collegeisen has been pretty solid. Like, both of those guys, premiership players, but have taken their games to new levels and just kind of helped Tom Stewart do his thing, Sam DeKoning do his thing. Jack Henry being fit is a massive plus. They were ravaged by injury probably late into last year when, the season was still up for grabs, but they were probably already looking unlikely. So, staying healthy and being durable is really what wins your flags. And that's, you look at pretty much any premiership winner in the last 10 years, they've all been healthy, particularly when it mattered most. So early season's still a plus, but still a lot, I think, we need to see from the Cats.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go against those better teams on the roster. So moving to the not as successful teams at the moment. So there's five teams that are winless currently as we head into round four, into gather round.
Yeah.
So we'll go through the list. So the Lions, probably the big one on there that are now winless after Collingwood snatched that win at the Gabba. So where do we see their first win?
I mean, it's It's hard not to say panic stations. I think they're 0-3 at the moment. They did have a bye last week. But as Chris Fagan did say post their loss against Collingwood, they do have another 20 games to catch up on. I think history has shown us that if you don't finish in the top four, you're very much unlikely, if not put a line through your premiership chances in terms of winning the flag. I think Bulldogs in 2016 were probably one from recent memory that did that feat. But yeah, they've still got incredible talent on their list. Aside from the off-field stuff, they're just on field. They're just not looking like they were previously. They've showed glimpses throughout the first three weeks of their season or first month. But yeah, they just need to get their on-field right through some leaders. They've obviously had a few key injuries. Tom Duday was meant to come in, didn't. Kitty Coleman is another one in
Coleman's
that back
Coleman's a big
half.
One, I think. Yeah.
So they've had to restructure on the go, which isn't always easy, especially when you have turned into the hunted as opposed to the hunter. They were essentially the benchmark last year along with Collingwood. So everyone had the whole summer to work out how to, I guess, combat Brisbane's game style and how they like to move the ball. And who to target in terms of players. Harris Andrews hasn't been as lethal, I guess, in defence, as productive. Same as Charlie coming up forward. But once they get the ball rolling, which I think inevitably will happen, I think they're going to be pretty hard to stop.
Yeah. Looking at what this weekend, North Melbourne, you'd like to think they win that. Like, obviously, one team should be coming away with their first win. Doubt it will say a draw. But, yeah, you'd think they get one and then that kind of flips onto the Roos and when their first win comes as well. Much like West Coast, who we'll touch on in a second, I don't really know why everyone is, you know, throwing their arms up that North don't look good. Like, I don't think we'll be expecting them to be this amazing side. They have faced GWS, Carlton and Frio look good. Like, Frio, a team a lot of people might have thought they would have beaten. Obviously, they held a pretty strong lead in that game. But against GWS, they had good signs. Against Frio, they had good signs before fading.
They've had great patches.
And then the Carlton game wasn't great. The Blues looked like one of the best sides in it at the moment. Brisbane this week's going to be tough for them. Really, when you're talking about wins for North, you're circling a game against West Coast, and I don't think they have a home game against West Coast until round 22. Play each other round 13 over in WA, which is still going to be a tough game for them. They lost there last year. I think they've got the Hawks in a couple of weeks, which, yeah, potentially might be their first, but I probably would be saying maybe it could be that that next West Coast game, if not the Hawthorn game, coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think North are one of those teams that could just snag a win somewhere because they have looked strong. Like in the Frio game, they looked very strong in that first half. Who knows? They could just stick that out for four quarters and snag one. So speaking of West Coast, again, it looks like it's going to be a pretty tough year for West Coast supporters again. So where could you see their first win coming?
Well, it's same thing as North. I don't know why everyone's panicking and we've got priority pick talk in round three or whatever. Like, I think I had West Coast winning one game for the year and it's not going to be soon. It's got Sydney this week. They host North round 13, I think it might be. And that was one of their wins from last year. So that's a chance for sure. But, you know, that's 10 rounds away. It's going to be pretty brutal if they're sitting 0-12 or what it might be at that point of the season. But, like I said, I only saw them winning one game and that might just be it. And then it's just another tough year. They haven't got the list to compete with 15, 16 other clubs.
Yep.
I think that's going to be the case. Are they going to pinch win anywhere? The Derby could be one. Like, Frio are playing well, but, you know, Derby kind of should be bringing out something a bit more from West Coast. And ideally, they get a few names back over the next few weeks. Dom Sheed, Liam Ryan. Hopefully, they're a bit fitter. Without Oscar Allen, though, for the next couple months, it's going to be really dire for them, I think.
Yep. Now, Hawthorn are another one of those clubs that have gone winless. Where do you see their next first win coming?
I mean, there is positives to take out of their first three losses, but there also is probably a lot of negatives. Sam Mitchell's, you know, said it time and time again. They are a young side. They're trying to minimise that difference between their best and their worst football.
A lot of injuries too.
A lot of injuries as well. Down back, they do look all at sea. And admittedly, it's probably not all their fault. A bit of unluckiness there. But forward of the ball, they're arguably not the most dangerous side, but they look the most dangerous. They've got a lot of young talent, a lot of raw talent. The midfield is still quite strong, I think. They're one of the best centre clearance midfield teams last year, and they've tried to continue that trend into this year, but haven't kind of reached that level yet. So I think they're probably a bit ahead of North Melbourne and West Coast for me, in terms of maybe their development and where they do sit on the AFL ladder. But for their next win, I mean, I think they play the Pies this week at Gather Round. Now, that's a bit of a danger game for Collingwood. They did lose to them last year by 5 goals or so. Obviously at a neutral ground, so there's no massive Collingwood army like we, you know, we seem to expect each week. So, you know, who knows? Hawthorn do have a tendency to kind of pull a rabbit out of the hat. They beat Brisbane last year as well, as I mentioned, the Pies too. So definitely not beyond them. And it's, you know, Jack Inivan coming up against his old club.
There'll be a bit in it.
It'll be a bit in it. Hawthorn like to be quite physical against the Pies, especially toward, you know, Nick Dacos and his brother Josh as well, to rough them up and see how they respond to, I guess, extra attention. But, you know, if, you know, the tipping going the way it should, you'd think they'd probably just go down to the Pies, which means their next win could be, I think North Melbourne was around six.
Around six, yeah.
And again, at this stage, as I said, I probably have them a little bit ahead of North Melbourne at this moment. So I think that's probably where they'll get their first win.
Yeah, they have Gold Coast the week after. And I think they've lost the last two to Gold Coast by 11 goals. So while you might think it's winnable, they haven't been in the recent Gold Coast side. It's hard to see them beating this year's one, especially when they've lost the last two by, combined almost 140 points. So, not looking great for the Hawks either. That North game is going to be interesting, assuming they're both winless in round six.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so a last winless team, Adelaide, who I had them in my top eight.
Same year.
In my preseason prediction. Yeah, so it's a bit of a surprise. So they play
Melbourne
this week. Yeah, should be a good one to gather around. We'll be there.
We will,
Should be very exciting. Touching that later in the week, I'll probably just be wandering around. So if you see me, say hi. but where do you think their first win comes from? I don't think it's going to be against the D's.
No, they were so good to open gather round last year. You'd like to see the same against Melbourne this week, but I think Melbourne would be too strong, especially if they get Stephen May back. It'll be a big difference. I think, you know, they just got over the line against Port without May. And I think if he's not playing, it should even things up a little bit, but hard to see them defeating the D's if he's there in the Demons' back line. Blues a week after doesn't really get any easier, especially when that's over in Melbourne. And then after that, I think they've got North. So again, another chance for North, but equally, you'd think Adelaide probably head in favourites for that one. So you'd probably be circling North. I'd love to get a scalp of Melbourne or Carlton, given that how well those two are going. But all signs probably point to round seven against North Melbourne.
Yep. All right, interesting one for Adelaide. So moving on now to our Zero Hanger MVP and a guy that has been playing out of his mind for the first part of this season, Isaac Heaney, takes the top spot.
Yeah, I think he polled 10 votes in a loss, which is decent effort. Probably has him at third best on ground across the game. Takes the lead over Tom Green, who obviously had a bye. So I think it's 9 votes separate those two. Max Gorn not too far off with a pretty strong outing against Port Adelaide. Matt Rouse stays around there despite having the bye as well. And then just about all the others in that top 12 or so polled, except for Zach Butters, who didn't have a bye. So, there's a fair bit of movement, obviously, this early into the season. Round three saw, I think, just the two perfect games, though, which is quite low. But I think Nick Flosten had probably one of the best games we've seen this year, quite comfortably.
Yeah.
Heaney's putting up really strong performances each week, but that one from Vlosten against Sydney was just immense. And then Mackay as well was the other one. So they've both moved into, I think, the top six or equal six with those perfect games. So a little bit of movement around at the moment, and then some highlights as well, like Heaney, who only had the 10 votes. I think Lachie Neal and who's the other one, James Warple, both polled 19 in losing sides, which is pretty hard to do.
Pretty good.
But very good effort. So bit of a shake up around the top. Obviously Heaney leading the way, but he'll have a bye week after gather round, so that'll make things quite interesting. See if Green can snatch some votes back after his strong start.
Yep. Still early days. Who surprised you, Aiden? Who did you get your votes to?
Well, definitely the Warple and Neal vote placings. You'd think in a losing side there'd be someone from the Victors team that would kind of take majority of the votes, if not all of them. But Neal was awesome in his return to the Lions. He almost single-handedly kept him in the game for big parts of it. And James Warple, he's kind of back to his best and fairest year.
Yeah.
In an under, he's getting out of the contest, especially the front of contest. He's been that real link man in between, defense and forward for the Hawks. As tough as they come, I think he's only going to get better. He's still quite young, so has plenty to learn. But yeah, with experience, I think comes a, you know, a bit of a better knowledge for the game, and obviously the exposure will, against the better players will only make him better. So those two were definitely worthy vote getters, but probably a shock given the fact that both their teams lost.
Yeah, I think Warple's like having a season that I think many thought John Newcombe would be. And he's doing really well given that Newcombe's not, and they don't have Will Day. So if they get Day back, and if Newcombe can find his feet and expectation, then that's a pretty strong midfield three with guys like McKenzie and Ward supporting. So yeah, he's been easily their best through that midfield group, which
Newcombe would be against the Cats, just compared to his first.
Well, yeah, he ideally getting better, but so it was a low floor to start with.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so the MVP leaderboard taking shape pretty early into the season. Moving over now to our rookie rankings. So Colby McKercher takes a spot from my boy Caleb Windsor, who moved from third to second. Didn't have a lot of disposals, but had a really crucial game. But yeah, Colby up top.
Yeah, you know, obviously quite a high draft pick in last year's national draft. Uses the ball, one of the best ball users from that draft. Kind of the Nick Dacos / Harry Sheasel positioning back there, given a lot of free reign under Alex Clarkson. Obviously, you're not going to expect him to, you know, be the best defender in the North Melbourne side, but what they put him there down there for is get his confidence up, try to get his hands on the ball as much as he can, give him license to, you know, take off that bold kick that most players probably wouldn't look for or commit to. So definitely his ball use is a facet of his game that is just only going to get better. And if it's not, probably one of the best in the competition at the moment, which is no surprise why he's jumped up to number one in our rookie rankings. So it's exciting to see where he'll take the rest of this year and hopefully North Melbourne into the future.
Yeah, he's looking very clean. I think 19 touches, which is somehow a season low already for him. So that's very good. And then, while Windsor and Howes comes in at 2 and 3, and Howes kind of falls a couple of spots, had a quiet game. Probably one you could see coming after his, I think, two of his first three games. He probably had slow starts and then got into it and performed quite well. And this one, he just couldn't make that breakthrough. So he drops down a couple of spots. Windsor, yeah, maybe just on a similar level to Howes, you might say. But that goal late into the game on Saturday night might have just been the difference. Just so much composure from a young fella.
Banger of his goal too.
Yeah, very, very memorable one. Yeah. And then kind of just looking at it, Harley holds his spot probably just. I think Seth Campbell, who takes Harvey Thomas's place, and really only because Thomas had a bye. They're all very tight, I think, just outside that podium. So Campbell, another one who had a nice clean moment, a little pickup late into the game that gave him a bit of breathing space when, there was, I think, just a couple minutes left and a couple points in it for the Tigers. So he was among a fair few young Tigers players to step up to the occasion late in that game. So, yeah, very good.
And a few more honourable mentions down there?
Yeah, probably the most we've had any round so far. Riley Sanders and Harvey Gallagher are both good contributors again for the Dogs against West Coast. Josh Draper, who had a decent shout out from Justin Longmuir after the game against Adelaide. And then Nick Watson, I thought was, a tough role to play, but from as much impact as you want to kind of have from a young fella, he was there, still missed a couple of chances, but still created some himself. So,
on a wet day too.
Yeah, tough.
Yeah, good stuff from the rookies. All right, so now moving over to our favorite segment is the mailbag. If you want to send something through to the mailbag, a hot take or a question or a talking point, you can do so on our social media at Zero Hanger. So the first one is a question from Josh Burton. So what do West Coast need to do to get back on track?
It's just getting minutes into young guys, isn't it? Like they can't expect to be jumping up anytime soon. It's just about making sure that they've got the right kids and positions filled out and that they get the minutes and legs into some of these younger fellas. And then the other one obviously is just trying to get them to stay fit. Like it's great having good young capital, but at the same time, if they're not on the park, Elijah Hewitt, a great example. We got great glimpses last year, but when he's out for 3 months this year, really hurts. So there's going to be a balance of, yes, getting minutes into the younger emerging players, but not burning them out at the same time and kind of managing their workload. So that's why they'll still see, you know, some guys who might not be part of their long-term plan playing at the moment, is because you can't just have, 20-year-olds playing each week. So it's going to be tough. What do they need to do over the next, couple years is just hit the draft. They might be able to get some decent recruitment, but who they go for is, might be a tough one. Liam Baker's probably the one they'll put a circle around this year, given he's off contract and from WA and, you know, still probably fits the age group, just a bit older, has good experience, would be a nice little fit in their midfield group the way he's going. Because I think at the Tigers, before their recent injuries, he was kind of playing half forward and couldn't get a look. And his last couple of weeks have been huge since playing through the midfield. So that's certainly something that they could table for him. But yeah, it's really just trying to stay fit. It sounds simpler than it is, but trying to stay fit and getting minutes into the younger kids, attacking the draft and being probably smart at the draft. Like, I think we spoke a lot last year up to November about probably them looking to trade their first pick. At the same time, it depends on what offers you get. And if you're not getting anything decent, then it makes it a bit difficult in that regard. But yeah, ideally they, you know, see Harley Reid pass his first 3-year deal and the same with a few of the other young guns. Keep them, get good legs into them and just show them that there's, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel at the moment.
Yep. Are you reckon, Aiden, or has Mitch pretty much said it all?
Pretty much said it all, yeah. I was just thinking they just need time. A lot of the old stars are obviously on their way out, if not have left already. So this new wave just needs time and exposure and experience at the level. They've clearly got some talent that the club does see. But yeah, just I think time and patience. From the Eagles' standpoint.
Mm, yep. Absolutely. All right, next take from Joel Strapper. So the Hawks will win a flag in the next 4 years. Aiden?
I like the bold claim there, Joel Strapper, and I'm almost with him. I see a lot of, not Hawthorn of old in terms of when Alistair Clarkson first got to the club in 04, but there's a big wave of young stars, as we mentioned, Will Day, Jai Newcomb, James Warple, Mitch Lewis, Josh Weddle, just to name a few, Nick Watson. They got Jack Ginnivan, obviously from the Pies as well. So they're all coming through at the same time at the right age. So in 4 years' time, they all could be from the age of, you know, 23 to 27, 28 and really starting to hit their prime. And then hopefully, you know, there's a lot of reports that, yeah, they're going to enter their war chest and start making some big plays for some big players as well from rival clubs. So the 4 years, I'd like to think that Hawthorn will probably be back up there. Maybe even potentially earlier. They've won, I think, 8-7 in the last two seasons. And, you know, apart from the poor start this year, they're probably on track to maybe start creeping that number up in the years to come. So, yeah, 4 years, I definitely see them contending at least. But where that sits, obviously, we don't know yet.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. All right, so last one. So this is a take. From Clark Hall's Productions, the goal umpires should trust themselves or have two of them. Because reviews are taking too long. So this is a pretty, this is a very multifaceted one. And I've got some opinions here because I work in video production. So I know how these cameras work. My big take is that the cameras aren't good enough. But I understand that the AFL have a budget and the cameras
they
actually
have so much money. Yeah, they have so, they shouldn't. Yeah. No, I'd be shocked if they're not trying to up their technology. Yeah. And look at, you know, goal line technology. And obviously the whole microchip stuff.
Yeah.
See how that pans out this year in the VFL.
Yeah.
And whatnot. Two umpires. No, that'll never happen. Probably.
You used to umpire, didn't you?
Yeah, not goal umpire though.
Yeah.
But two goal umpires would be way too much money, given how much you have to pay them per game and you're doubling those costs for the year. So that money may as well go.
Confusion.
So, well, yeah, what's the argument against adding multiple umpires?
Well, that's cost. That's cost. Oh, it'd be great because you could just have them manning two posts each. But I think people have to be a little bit I understand there's been a few frustrating reviews this year, but you have to draw back to last year and remember that a team didn't make finals because of a goal umpire review. They're where they backed themselves in. I'm not saying that, you know, goal umpires don't know what they're doing. They absolutely do, and they're the best at it. Same like field umpires that are going to make mistakes. And if they do, you kind of want that to be righted in favor. So, yeah, like Adelaide literally missed out on the top eight because of a goal umpiring mistake. So if it means, you know, they take a minute out of your afternoon just to double check something, then so be it. There can be ways around it. Maybe, you know, they kind of do forced reviews in the last few minutes of a game, but still everyone's going to point to something even if it happened earlier. But, yeah, I think we probably need to find a balance of not as many reviews as what we're getting at the moment, but still some consideration to, you know, why it's a needed process.
Yeah. I think the priority is getting the result right. I don't mind if they take a little bit too long because, as you said, yeah, that Sydney, Adelaide, it's just too costly. Absolutely. To be wrong there. I think the goal line ball chip technology needs to come in as
maybe next year if it works this year, which is ideal.
I think the big issue is when a ball's touched before and goes over the goal line. That's something that I don't know if that's going to be solved by ball chip technology.
Yeah. Because I don't know if heat works or something like that. Like obviously you got heat cameras.
It's
got to
be in the ball. Yeah.
Like you think of cricket when they've got this like whatever you call it, thermal cameras that can pick up heat. Like you're not sure if that works with hands on balls and stuff, but they would have tried it, I would have thought, by this point, so it's probably not an option.
But I think that's definitely something that cannot be fixed with cameras.
Very hard.
Yeah, especially with
Need a heap of cameras everywhere. But again, cost.
I think, just the inherent size and shape of an AFL field is just impossible to get that right 100% of the time. So I think that should wrap it up for us.
Sounds good.
Successful episode of Zero Hanger. Don't forget to subscribe and join us on the socials. We'll be at Gather Round.
Yes, we will.
This week, yep.
It's going to be very good.
A lot of coverage, so keep up to date on the socials. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thank you, Aiden.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mitch. And we'll see you next time.